VOA News. I'm Laurel Bowman. Millions of Muslims around the world are observing Eid, marking the end of the fasting month of Ramadan. The AP's Charles de Ledesma reports on Eid in Gaza.
Displaced by the war, thousands of Palestinians who live in tents in Mawasi, Gaza, have gathered in the rain to mark Eid. A large group pray while smoke seen rising in the direction of Khan Yunis. For many Palestinians, celebrating despite the hardships is a show of solidariety. Riyadh Qudair, a displaced person in the camp, says, "We will overcome the sorrows and live the atmosphere and celebrate each other and greet each other in this happy atmosphere. We will have a blessed Eid for the Islamic nation." About 80% of Gaza Strip's population has been displaced by the war, most of them living in the southern part of the enclave, including Mawasi. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
AP correspondent Jennifer King reports now on developments in the classified documents case of former U.S. President and Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump.
In the classified documents case against former President Donald Trump, U.S. District Judge Aileen Cannon granted a request Tuesday by special counsel Jack Smith's team aimed at protecting the identities of potential government witnesses to protect them from harassment. Trump defense lawyers had filed a motion and were seeking permission to make public mostly unredacted attachments, documents they obtained from prosecutors they said would bolster their claim that the Biden administration had sought to weaponize the government in charging Trump. Judge Cannon agreed with prosecutors to redact the names, but rejected a request to categorically block witness statements from being disclosed in pretrial motions, saying she could not find precedent. The disagreement was one of many that has slowed the pace of the case, which still does not have a firm trial date. I'm Jennifer King.
And U.S. President Joe Biden welcomes Japan's prime minister at the White House today. This is VOA News. South Korea's main opposition party and its allies were projected to win a majority in Wednesday's elections for the country's legislature. Exit polls shows, and what would mark a significant blow to President Yoon Suk-yeol. Floods engulfed cities and towns across Russia and Kazakhstan on Wednesday after Europe's third longest river burst its banks, forcing over 110,000 people to evacuate and swamping parts of the Russian city of Orenburg. And AP correspondent Julie Walker has more on the near total ban on abortions set to take effect in the U.S. state of Arizona.
Arizona's Supreme Court says that near total ban on abortions won't begin for at least 2 weeks. Some clinics say they'll continue to provide abortions up to 15 weeks into pregnancy for a short period of time. Governor Katie Hobbs, a Democrat, on that ruling that came down Tuesday.
The near total Civil War era ban that continues to hang over our heads only serves to create more chaos for women and doctors in our state.
The law provides no exceptions for rape or incest, allows abortions only if the mother's life is in jeopardy, and orders prosecution for anyone helping a pregnant woman with an illegal abortion. I'm Julie Walker.
Officials in Greece say the government is planning to unveil new measures next month to boost lagging birth rates. The country's fertility rate is one of the lowest in Europe, fueled by its debt crisis, austerity, and shifting attitudes. Still, even those behind the fresh plans doubt they can reverse the trend. Reuters' Christy Kilburn has more.
Nicholas Giannakidis is the only 13-year-old in his village in northeastern Greece. His father, Christos, often drives him about 30 miles from Armenio to play soccer with the few other children scattered across the region. The village used to be full of kids. Now, its president, Stratos Vasiliadis, says two-thirds of the 300 residents are over 70.
We are at a turning point. The next few years are our last chance for something to change.
Much of Europe is struggling with tumbling birth rates that experts say will threaten long-term economic well-being.
That was Reuters' Christy Kilburn reporting. And the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency on Wednesday announced its first ever drinking water standard to protect people against toxic chemicals found in many household and everyday items. I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News.
And more. Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I am telling our friends, the doctors, that we mind about them, we value the service they give to our nation, but we must live within our means.
That was Kenyan President William Ruto asking doctors to call off their strike. Details coming up. Also, Muslims in Kenya and the rest of the world are getting ready for the festivities of Eid al-Fitr. And Nigerians are having a difficult time coping with a government-mandated electric tariff hike. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. As Ramadan draws to a close, Muslims in Kenya and the rest of the world are getting ready for the festivities of Eid al-Fitr, the holiday marking the end of Ramadan. But some are cutting back on their usual preparations because of high prices. Zainab Saeed reports from Nairobi.
In the part of Nairobi known as California, Zuhura Ibrahim works as a henna artist, a passion she turned into a business about 3 years ago.
Time management is something very important. Creativity. Henna goes with brain. You can't just wake up and start drawing people. You have to take your time, master a certain flower, practice, by the way. You have to practice a lot.
Ibrahim is setting up for a client. Eid al-Fitr, the holiday celebrating the end of Ramadan, is among her busiest periods. This year, she says, she has not booked as much business compared with previous years. Ibrahim, however, is optimistic the portfolio she has created over the years will attract clients despite rising prices.
2 years ago, I used to buy this sachet for 150, but for now it's 250. So the difference between 150 to 250 is very high. So that's why parents ought to just give their children to go and be drawn rather than them.
Ibrahim's client, Mariam Mudhoni, has been forced to squeeze her budget this year to accommodate this tradition that she has embraced since childhood.
There's some things I just had to drop for me to get henna done on my hands. Like if last year, I had 3 dresses for Eid, this year I will do 2 so that I can save the rest of the money for me to come and get my henna done.
Nairobi's Eastleigh section over the years has grown famous for the Eid shopping. This year is no different. Though a quick eye scan shows a busy market, sellers here are complaining of low profits. This has been linked to Kenya's economy. Sheikh Ibrahim Lithome of Jamia Mosque in Nairobi is calling on the government to look into lowering prices of essential commodities.
Because of the cost of living this year, many people will forego some of those things that they do in other months. And this is because of the cost of living. We call upon the leaders of this country, the president of this country, to do all he can do to make sure that the cost of living goes down. He was elected on the platform of uplifting the person at the bottom.
Many Muslims are also hoping for an end to conflict raging in parts of Africa and a little further away in Gaza.
The world should preach peaceful coexistence. And again, for those people who are the oppressors, I think the world should come together again as the oppressor and to rescue the oppressed.
Eid begins upon the appearance of the crescent moon. Zainab Said, VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
Police in Gabon say a crime wave has hit the capital, Libreville, several days after the country's transitional president pardoned and set free over 500 prisoners. Civil society groups launched a campaign yesterday asking the government to give the former prisoners more support and for freed prisoners to be law-abiding citizens. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Le président de la transition, président de la République.
This is the voice of General Jean-Germain Effayong Onong, commander-in-chief of Gabon's Penitentiary Administration, telling Gabon's State TV that former prisoners caught committing crimes will either be punished or sent back to prison. Onong says the country's transitional government, led by General Brice Clotaire Oligui-Nguema, wants civilians to live in peace with total freedom to carry out their daily activities. Onong spoke about a week after the government set free more than 560 of the close to 4,000 inmates at the Libreville Central Prison. In December, President Oligui, who seized power from President Ali Bwen Bongo following a disputed election last August, promised to set free over 1,000 prisoners. He said most were civilians who were unjustifiably held in prison by Gabon's former leaders. The general said a majority of prisoners were held in pre-trial detention for a long time with no evidence of wrongdoing. The presidential pardon did not extend to prisoners who had been convicted of drug-related offenses or violent crimes. However, Gabon's police this week reported that many people who regained freedom following the presidential clemency have been arrested for involvement in crimes such as theft, assault, and highway robbery. Freeman Olio Obiang is Secretary General of SOS Prisoners, a non-governmental organization that works for the well-being of Gabon's inmates. Obiang says it is very surprising that less than 2 weeks after regaining freedom, former prisoners whose liberation was hard-earned are again arrested by the police for committing crimes. Obiang says while waiting for families and the government to socially and economically reintegrate the freed prisoners, his organization is providing moral and financial assistance to poor and unemployed civilians who were freed by Gabon's transitional government. Obiang did not say how much financial assistance SOS prisoners provides to the freed inmates. Rights groups and SOS prisoners blame unemployment, the high cost of living and poverty for the crime wave reported by Gabon police. They also say if prisons in Gabon were the correctional facilities they are supposed to be, freed prisoners would not be involved with crime. Sanistas Kuma is Gabon's Director General of Penitentiary Affairs. Kuma says Gabon's transitional government is planning to improve living conditions of inmates while in prison and when the inmates eventually regain their freedom. He says conditions deteriorated during ousted President Ali Bongo Ondimba's term in office. Kuma says Gabon's central prison in Libreville, constructed for less than 1,000 inmates, had about 4,000 detainees when General Oligui seized power in an August 30 coup. Shortly after the coup, President Oligui freed several political prisoners who had jailed for years without trial. Included in that release were Jean-Rémy Yama, leader of the Coalition of Gabon State Workers Trade Unions, Renault Alogo Akwe, former Director General of Gabon's National Social Insurance and Health Fund, and Leandre Nzue, former mayor of Gabon's capital. Hundreds more or less prominent prisoners pardoned by Oligui are scheduled to be released by the end of April. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The Egyptian Party for Development and Reform, a liberal opposition party, has urged President Sisi to form a strong cabinet that can tackle the economic crisis, focus on industrial and agricultural production, and stop spending hard currency on mega projects when Egypt is still borrowing billions of dollars. The party also asked the president to enact political reform that supports political parties to restore their role in political life and enable them to compete for peaceful transition of power. VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shanawi discussed these demands with the party's president, Mohamed Anwar Al-Sadat.
This is a request which has been on from all economic experts and also other international financial institutions. They have been recommending that the Egyptian government has to prioritize some of this national projects, and they should deal with our hard currency in a very wise way to avoid all this financial crisis we have been through. So, of course, our party, like many others, have been demanding the president, since he is now having the starting of his third term, that he should select a government with an economic background and also a government which could deal with all these current challenges. And he should also give them full authority to deal with all these files completely in their own without any interference from any other institutions or him even personally, since he is not an economic expert. They should give them free hand to deal with whatever needed. And after all, they will be accountable in front of the president and also the parliament. So this is why we have been requesting this, pushing for this, and hopefully after the holidays, we can see a new government which is really willing to deal with all these challenges.
Your party also called on the president to enact political reform that supports political parties in order for them to restore its role in political life and enable them to compete for peaceful transition of power. What's preventing scores of political parties in Egypt from depending on their grassroots to be empowered instead of asking the president?
Asking the president is important because the problem has two sides. One side is the parties itself. We are, as political parties, having some defects. We are not engaged. We are not working on the ground. Also, we are not encouraging members to join the political parties so it could represent a real presence within the public opinion. Maybe we don't have the right messages. This is a part which we as political parties are responsible for. But asking the president, because there is another side, which is the new law which we expect to see, which encouraging, strengthening, supporting political parties to be engaged and also allowing the political parties to campaign in the streets, on government rates, to be engaged with the people. Sometimes we do have problems with the security that they don't allow some political parties to have activities on the ground. So we need this to be clear. If we would like to support and to help the political life, it means that political parties has to be strengthened, supported by easing all the restrictions which sometimes we face when we start to be engaged. And we need to have also access to the media so we can promote our programs, our solutions, recommendation for ideas. So we need to have the president to interfere, to have access to the national media, which is controlled by the government and its institutions.
In his speech after taking the oath, President Sisi pledged to continue the journey of nation building and fulfilling aspirations of the Egyptian people in building a modern democratic state. What's your take on that?
Now the country is stable, almost back to normal. So it's time to have political reforms, same as economic reforms. And this is what he promised. So we would like to see this happening. And this was advices from all our partners, European, American, friends, that they believe that Egypt have to give more room for political and civil rights, freedom of expression. So he promised that this term he will make a big shift and people will enjoy a more democratic Egypt, more equal opportunities. So we have to wait and see what will happen.
That was Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat, president of the Liberal Egyptian Party for Development and Reform, speaking with VOA's Mohamed al-Shinawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. 9 Nigerians are having a difficult time coping with a government-mandated electric tariff hike, according to the Association of Electricity and Allied Companies. The group has warned of possible social unrest if President Bola Tinubu fails to reverse the over 245% increase. Political and social analyst Dr. Abubakar Mohammed told VOA's Chinedu 4 that power supply countrywide has worsened since the new tariff took effect.
There is no light. In Abuja, I was in Abuja last 2 weeks or so. It's 2-3 hours a day. I'm in Maiduguri as I'm talking to you. Ever since I came here, there has been no light. That's why you see my house is running on generator, and then in the afternoon we struggle to get solar or something. That's for people that can even afford the remaining ones. God have mercy on them. So where is the power? Where is the light?
How are people coping, and how are industries coping with what you just described as almost an hour, 2 hours out of 24 hours of electricity or none at all?
I have a small factory here in Maiduguri where we do light manufacturing and packaging. The factory is grounded. I can't run that thing on diesel and still make profits. It's not just me. Many other people are passing through the same kind of challenge. Schools that you go, you see laptops, computer in the ICT room, they cannot operate those items, those equipment for children to learn, because where is the power to power those items? The school cannot afford petrol, cannot afford gas. Same thing with hospitals. Is second life difficult for everybody? People are just barely managing to cope because they have no any other option.
Has the government announced any remedial measures? Has the government said how long this will last? Any indications that power supply will improve anytime soon?
I think this power sector has been one of the most lucrative cash cow for Nigerian politicians. Under the administration of President Olusegun Obasanjo, about $16 billion was squandered in the name of producing power, and a single kilowatt has not been produced. I think the most important thing for us as Nigerians is to see how we can increase the megawatt. We are managing with about 4,000 or is it 3,000 megawatts, a country of about 220 million people. How can we survive on that? And the government, they are now saying people should stop using air conditioning system, their refrigerator, they should stop it. That's not the solution. The solution is let them come see how they can increase this megawatt. And for example, you go to Aba, Professor Batnaji is doing something that, you know, the federal government of Nigeria couldn't do. This was somebody they frustrated out of the system. He is performing wonders there. They have even started enjoying it. 24-hour or so, a steady electricity supply in Aba. Why can't they employ, consult someone like this to scale up what he has done in Aba so that the whole country can benefit? To my mind, until and except I see them making concerted effort to increase the megawatt to maybe 10,000 or 20,000, I don't think we are serious. And for now, the government clearly has no any concrete solution or clear-cut strategy to achieve that. They're trying to work with Siemens. How many megawatt can that Siemens give them? I think the key is to go into renewable energy.
That's political and social analyst Dr. Abubakar Mohammed speaking with VOA's Chinedu Ofor from the northern city of Maiduguri. Kenyan doctors held new demonstrations yesterday in their push for better pay and working conditions. The doctors are demanding a commitment from the government to fulfill collective bargaining agreements signed in 2017. But President William Ruto says the country has no money to pay the doctors and asked them to return to work. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
The doctors united shall never be defeated. Thousands of striking doctors and medical trainees chant as they protest outside the Kenyan parliament. Led by officials of Kenya's main healthcare professionals union, the doctors say they are striking for the implementation of a 2017 collective bargaining agreement they reached with the government. Davji Atela is Secretary General of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union.
The government has not implemented critical components of this collective bargaining agreement. And instead, they have begun to violate it outrightly. Number one, we've realized that the basic salary arrears that doctors are supposed to earn from 2017 has not been implemented up to date. So it means that despite the inflation, despite the salary changes, and all the other civil servants and public servants, doctors have remained and other health workers without it being considered. Instead, we realized that the new doctor interns, when they're being posted, their salaries were reduced by 91%.
President William Ruto has asked the doctors to call off the strike and go back to work, saying the government is struggling with a huge wage bill and cannot afford to review the salaries.
And I am telling our friends, the doctors, that we mind about them, we value the service they give to our nation, but we must live within our means.
Opposition lawmakers who joined the striking doctors Tuesday accused the president of using the wage bill as an excuse to deny doctors their due pay at a time when there is exorbitant spending in government. Paul Ongili, also known as Babu Owino, and Otiende Amolo are opposition members of parliament.
The doctors must not be paid yesterday. They must not be paid tomorrow. But they must be paid today. Ruto took loans and Ruto is collecting taxes. And those taxes must be used to pay these doctors. Ruto is vicariously liable for all the deaths occurring in the hospitals. For all the deaths occurring in this country. Because he has refused. He has refused to pay the doctors.
We want to reassure you that we stand with you. And we stand with your right under the Constitution to peacefully demonstrate. Yes. And nobody has the authority to outlaw a peaceful demonstration by doctors.
Irene Kenyatta, a final year medical student at the University of Nairobi, is among those who joined the doctors in the demonstrations.
I'm fighting for my future. I went to school to have a bright future. It can't be the moment that I'm going to finish school, you're telling me that I can't have the bright future after all. I've invested a lot. If I want a bright future, I have to get the bright future. Even if it means coming to the streets to fight for my rights.
The 2017 Kenyan doctors' strike that lasted 100 days is the longest in the country's history. Implementation of the collective bargaining agreement that ended that strike is the cause of the current strike, now in its fourth week. And with both the government and the doctors' union taking tough stances, it is Kenyans who bear the brunt of the stalemate. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye Faye has ordered his prime minister to draw up an urgent action plan to strengthen the country's flagging economy and finances. On Tuesday, the 44-year-old leader gave his prime minister and former mentor Ousmane Sonko until the end of the month to draw up the plan. The French news agency AFP says Faye ordered the government to finalize the plan by the end of the month and to implement it right away along with the private sector to relaunch the national economy. He told ministers he had been elected to ensure a profound breakaway and a transformation at all levels of economic and social life in the country. Unveiling his cabinet on Friday, Sonko said the government's priorities would include employment for young people, lowering the cost of living, and protecting human rights. South African police say they have arrested six suspects for the slaying of footballer Luke Fularas, who played for popular Johannesburg club Kaizer Chiefs. The 24-year-old defender was gunned down last week as he refilled his car at a petrol station. Police say he was waiting to be served when he was confronted by two men who ordered him out of the vehicle at gunpoint. Once he got out of his car, they shot him, then drove away in their vehicles. Investigators believe the suspects are part of a crime syndicate responsible for other car hijackings in Johannesburg's Gauteng province. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.